Welcome to Equipping the Core. October is Cyber Awareness Month, and there's no one better to have on the show than Mr. Gurang Dabe, the Cyber Technology Officer and the Marine Corps' Acquisition Authorizing Officer. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning, and thank you, Morgan. Appreciate having me on the show.
That's perfect. We're going to talk all things cyber. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, let's level set a bit. What is your role at Marine Corps Systems Command in cybersecurity?
Great question. So Marine Corps Systems Command is the acquisition command in the Marine Corps. We are the only acquisition command in the Marine Corps. Therefore, my role as a cyber technology officer, I serve as a technical expert, supporting commander, executive director, and affiliated POs, which are PO Lens System, PO Digital, and PO MLB, which is Manpower, Labor, and Business Systems. I also work across the PM to support them with technical assessments on the system that we use. You know, those are ground-based system and IT systems. So when the call comes in to understand the vulnerabilities on our system, we partner with MCTISA, Marine Corps Tactical System Support Activity, which is out in Camp Pendleton, using their expertise and conducting some of those technical assessment on the cyber assessment to identify the vulnerabilities, if any, and provide those reports to our program office so they can, secure our system in a better way.
So you talked about what your role is in the cyber side, but how does that relate to the AOP, so you being the authorizing officer?
Marine Corps headquarters recently, they delegated acquisition authorizing official duties to commander of CISCOM to leverage our technical support, technical expertise in our acquisition world, which is further delegated to me as a cyber technology officer.
Okay.
So Marine Corps has on the NIPR and SIPR, on the classified side SIPR, we have only two AOs. We help each other out, as a backup to if a service AO is away, or away from the work, I help out. But mostly, coming back from the acquisition world, I help out, in terms of our system, knowing our system, and providing our expertise in getting an ATO to our program offices and our system.
Okay.
However, the main part from modernizing our RMF risk management framework is to find different ways of doing business. So traditionally, we've been working, we as a DoD as a whole, we provide the RMF ATOs on our traditional methods.
Okay.
Now we are going away from that and providing a cybersecurity as a bolt-on from the Department of Navy CIO office. We call it Cyber Ready Initiatives. Basically, it introduces the cyber dashboard, continuous monitoring piece, which is RMF,
okay.
Step six, looking at your system constantly and identify if there's any vulnerabilities versus waiting to understand when those vulnerabilities are. So as an AO, we are going after things like, how can we make, ATO process better for the Marine Corps? So several things we are doing is we are going after we call the DevSecOps, process improvements, leveraging a thing called RACE 2.0, which stands for Rapid Assess and Incorporate Software Engineering.
Okay.
2.0, which process introduces a more secure gate reviews requirements for having certain tools for doing software engineering in a more safer environment.
Okay.
And this RACE 2.0 allows us to have an ATO on that system and not having to have an ATO within those application that resides in that environment. So we are able to deliver better, faster, and cheaper capabilities to a warfighter. In recent example, we just certified, we call the RACE Platform of Choice, or RPOC, within our Marine Corps Community Services Software Factory, which was awarded last week. So
that's exciting.
It is very exciting for the Marine Corps. This is the first ever RPOC certified in the Marine Corps. Navy has about three or four, you know, RPOC certified.
Okay.
Which again, you know, security emphasizing cybersecurity, but at the same time, you have a better secure product that does not need an ATL within those applications. So we are able to deliver those capability better, faster, and cheaper. As you know, recent Commandant's 39 Commandant's planning guide, you know, stated that we need to continue our force design, providing network modernization to have a better capability to our warfighter. And this is one of the initiatives as RMF modernizing for the Marine Corps and the Department of Navy. So being an AO, you know, we are able to conduct not just ATO purpose, but as a, you know, SISCOM perspective, we're able to conduct those technical assessment on RAISE platform of choice and then provide that input to the headquarters of Marine Corps, who then takes that input and certifies the platform. This, in this case, the Marine Corps Community Services as an RPOC. We are also tracking our outcomes, how long it takes for us to finish a one package or approval process within the Marine Corps. And so far, last 6 months, we are able to see how soon we have cut down those time frame for reviewing the packages. At the same time, how much help that we are giving to our programmatic support within the Marine Corps. We are able to clarify some of the things that program office may not understand, that they may go on a different route that would take them longer to do their cybersecurity processes, executing those things, versus I'm being there as an AO, providing them an example of certain things that we can get done faster, that they don't have to do that anymore. So we are able to save some time for our program offices, as well as process those ATO packages in a faster way that we can provide the capability to the warfighter.
So RPOC, if it's using RAISE platform of choice, would the system still need to get an ATO, or does that push it through the ATO process by going through that system?
Yeah, so RPOC is basically, we take the existing system that has an ATO. Okay. So you need only one ATO for the overarching system.
Okay.
And we take that overarching system and, go through that RPOC process or RAISE 2.0 process and certify that as an RPOC. And so just imagine as a one larger boundary, of that environment, we certify that. And within that environment, any of those applications coming out of that RPOC, through the RAISE, process, they don't need an ATO. So you need only one ATO and application coming out of that environment. So one ATO, no ATOs for the application that comes out. So we save money for those applications, they no longer need ATO.
Okay. I guess we can backpedal just a little bit. For those who are listening that don't necessarily understand cybersecurity, do we want to give a brief explanation of what that is?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as you brought up earlier, that this is the perfect time as, October is a cybersecurity awareness month. And you start out from scratch with those. Some people may not know the basics of cybersecurity, what that is, right? So I would define cybersecurity as a practice, of protecting computers, data, network, in a different forms where you block the access from unauthorized gaining access through your data or network, your system, And I give an example, like very basic example. Imagine your home, with a door and windows.
Yeah.
So, you lock your windows, you lock your door, so you are, securing the outer, space of anybody coming into your home. So we need to have a basic awareness of how do we secure our systems. And it's not just at work, we do everything we can at work, but mainly at home, you're in a private networks. When folks are at home, if you want to summarize this cyber awareness month, we look at it four things, particularly. One is that be aware from phishing attempts, that those emails we get, if something doesn't make sense, don't click on the link, because that's the fastest way of adversary to gain access to your system through running a malicious code. You know, if you click on the link, it, you know, let them download the, you know, the malicious code to your computer, and the, you know, other things can happen from there.
And now so it comes through text message.
You have to be careful with the text message. The link you see, those emails or text messages that you get, you know, if it doesn't make sense, sometimes, you know, in the email, you can hover, you know, your cursor or mouse, and you can see the full, you know, email or the link. If it does not start with HTTPS, do I want to click on it? Also hover it on that link to see the full link and see if it makes sense. The rule of thumb is don't click, you know, on things that you don't know. Secondly, even at home, make sure you have strong passwords. I mean, those are, if you have an 8 characters password, you know, no matter how complex you have, and you only have it 8 characters, those password cracking tools are out there. They can break your password within seconds if you have 8 characters, combination of anything. But if you have a longer password with combination of special characters and such, it's hard to break, you know. So make sure you have a strong password. And use your multi-factor authentication, like, you know, second, sort of authentication tools, such as at home, like, you know, having text messages, you know, getting a one-time code. Use those things to, you know, verify that it's you. And the last thing is that, you know, update your software as is available. Don't run a software or an application or an operating system which is not supported anymore, because those are the easiest holes for, you know, adversary to run, to come into your system and exploit your system, right? So those, you know, with the Cyber Awareness Month, you know, make sure that you follow those things. And I think the best thing to do is that you start with people, workforce, right? You know, if you are vigilant, if you are careful, we'll block those majority of the attacks that's coming in. And then this, going back to this software security, you know, cybersecurity, you know, my example as a house, you know, being, you know, locked with doors and windows. And, you know, at work, we have a defense in depth mechanism, means that we have a, you know, DoDIN network, defense information network, which, you know, with at the boundary, we have sensors that protects us from, you know, malicious code, like, you know, folks, you know, adversary try to come in to exploit. And then you get to the different layer of, you know, networking with the service level, and then, you know, so forth. So, you know, going back to that same example in cybersecurity at the home, you know, if you have a, you know, specific data that you want to protect, your, you know, personal at home, your bank accounts, you know, other additional information, sensitive information, you want to store it in a such a way that, you know, you lock the doors, you know, from the main door coming in. Windows are locked. However, if you have a secure system, you can also lock the, you know, door at the room that you want to have information there. And then further on, then you want to have a safe, which is also locked within the room. So, you know, you follow that kind of concept, you know, you can secure your information, the data that is very important to you at home, you know, or private networks, you can do that. You know, but again, you know, having the October as a Cyber Awareness Month, I cannot, you know, stress enough to the folks that, you know, it starts with you as a workforce. Make sure if it thinks doesn't make sense, don't click on it. Don't forward emails that didn't, you know, make sense. And just make sure that, you know, you do your job as I defined earlier, and I think we'll be more secure.
Thinking of putting the safe within behind a door, it made me think of some of those action movies where they're going in to steal something, I don't know, a jewel, but, you know, they go through all those different booby traps, and there's like lasers, or you have to go down from the ceiling, and it's kind of like that, but cyber.
Yeah.
You know,
when you see, you know, in the movies that, you know, somebody, you know, action movies, you know, someone tries to steal, you know, expensive jewelry or the money, they're breaking into the wall with different securities. This is, you know, the data. Imagine your data that is very important to you, as important as, you know, having that, you know, jewelry that you're trying to protect, right? You're protecting in that such a way. So like at home, you have security tools, you know, you have antivirus, you know, definitions to scan it before, you know, they, you know, you try to run something. So exactly what you just said, you know, your data is the key that you want to protect.
As we're talking about jewel thieves, we're constantly looking for ways to outthink our adversaries. Can you tell us a bit more what the Marine Corps is doing in this realm and cybersecurity?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, earlier we talked about, you know, recent release of 39th Commandant Planning Guide, right? You know, basically talks about force design remains the righteous journey for us, right? And the force design talks about modernizing our network, mainly, as we talked earlier, data is the key piece here. And it's all about data centricity, how we provide data from sensor to shooter, you know, at the edge. And the key thing is how we transmit the data, protecting the data, and transport the data so the, you know, the leadership or the shooter at the edge can make the decision, informed decision. So we do is, you know, things as, you know, we counter, re-counter, right? You know, we find some information that is data that is available, and then based on that, we adjust. And then we, you know, react to that. And then we find more additional data on the information. And then you make the decision accordingly. So in that sense, you know, we are using, you know, intelligence, you know, functions, intelligent data, and also modernizing our cybersecurity infrastructure. Key principle is to implementing the zero trust, you know, capability across all the, you know, domain. Where, you know, zero trust in the DoD defines, you know, starting from identity to protecting the data. You know, each time that, you know, any individual access the data, it you know, checks whether or not that user has, you know, access to that information or not. So implementing the zero trust, you know, providing the information that is needed at the edge using the, you know, cloud environment, you know, that is a key factor for us Marine Corps, especially the cloud environment that we have available at the edge. Now we are able to process, you know, complex algorithm at the edge and able to make the decision. And previously we talked about some of the things, you know, on the software factory. The Marine Corps is focused on, we call the Marine Corps software factory, joining with utilizing the Army's, you know, software factory. So we have a Marine coding, you know, various applications, simple things, you know, learning how to do that DevSecOps environment. So when the Marine, individual Marine is at the edge, you know, they can, based on the data that they have, they can on the fly modify some of those things that they learn through the software factory and get an output and process complex algorithms at the edge and able to get some information.
That's really cool.
That was not available before. So we are modernizing by network, you know, modernizing network using cloud services even at the edge. We have, you know, tools that we were not able to use before at the edge. Now we are able to, you know, process some of those complex algorithms, you know, at the edge and able to get some of the answers for the Marine Corps mission. So we can conduct that, you know, mission at the edge and, you know, based on the data that we have, protecting that.
Teaching the Marines to code, does that fall under the Commandant's Talent Management 2030 initiative?
You know, it directly goes into modernizing network and talent management piece.
Okay.
Right? So the talent management, you know, we describe is that, you know, we can have, you know, all modernized, you know, tools, but the talent is not there, like workforce, in our case, the individual Marines. In the Marine Corps, we call out as the individual Marine is the lethal weapon, right? You know, and if we putting the individual Marine through this software factory from their perspective is the part of the talent management that calls out through the force design and the Commandant's Planning Guide, that this is how we're going to modernize, starting with an individual Marine who you know, is prepared and smart enough to do certain things that we were not able to do, you know, in terms of software factory, in the cyber tools, running those cyber tools, running some of those algorithms at the edge, modernizing. We're not looking at coding a bigger app, you know, at the edge, but if they have a data and they have a capability, the individual Marine can just modify really quick and they can have a specific outcome or the information that they are looking for right at the edge, utilizing the cloud service infrastructure at the edge that they can do now.
You've kind of touched on this, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, because we've talked about it just us in the past, that there is a difference between offensive and defensive. So here at Marine Corps Systems Command, we do defensive cyber ops. Can you talk about what the difference is between defensive and offensive, and what agencies have the ability to do offensive?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we are the acquisition command. When we, are in the process of implementing either ground-based weapon system or information systems in support of the Marine Corps as a whole, our job is to make sure that the system that we have designed, you know, we have the requirement, cyber survivability requirement, to make sure that our system is cyber secure.
Okay.
You know, so in that sense, we look through various ways of building, our system is more robust. It can defend against, some of those, cyber vulnerabilities that were available, they were out there. So we follow, some of the things that we talked about, different new processes on DevSecOps that I talked about, RAISE 2.0 process that we, mentioned earlier. That RAISE 2.0 process, makes it, the system, well secure, because it has various gates that requires in the individual, system or application to have those security built in before delivering the application or the code or the, capabilities.
And it's constantly checking.
And it's constantly checking. So there are various gates. It checks for if there's a, software bill of materials requirement, system level tests, dynamic level tests. So you have a built-in constant cycle as you add new capabilities. You are, putting security, dev, security, as a sec, and you have operational environment ops, all that built-in cycle. So as you include the new capability, it goes to the testing environment, building security, and then it goes into the operational, testing environment before it gets deployed.
Okay.
So you have a well-secure capability. So we only focus on how do we secure our system as, as defending our system. On an offensive cyber ops perspective, in the United States, unlike other countries, hostile countries out there, we have laws and regulations. So, only certain, entities within the government, such as, National Security Administration or NSA, are able to conduct, offensive cyber ops.
Okay.
And partner with other, agency. They have, approval for that, authorities. We are not, able to, conduct, offensive cyber ops in this.
We focus on defending our
systems. We focus on, absolutely defending our systems. However, the things that we have, found from offensive cyber ops, that goes right into the input for the defensive cyber ops. So in the Marine Corps, we have a MARFOR Cyber Command, which is directly armed, supporting to Cyber Command, Combatant Command, which is our component to supporting the cyber, as a larger COCOM perspective. So the things that we learn on offensive cyber ops that is out there, that gets communicated sometimes to us, and then we implement, our system to make sure that, those things are not, applied to on the defensive cyber ops that, adversary can do the same thing, So it goes, hand in hand that, if something is found, there's a hole that other entity can do offensive cyber ops, we would know that, and we would try to patch that hole so we are not able to exploit that particular vulnerability.
And we have blue and red teams that do that out at MCTISA, correct?
So Marine Corps has a red team, which stays within Marfor Cyber, and we have a MACOG underneath of Marfor Cyber, which is our, you know, cyber security, you know, CISSP, provider, cybersecurity provider. And they have, we have a red team through them.
Okay.
And it gets certified by NSA with certain tools. MCTISA, proudly, we were able to get a blue, you know, a, we call blue team, which basically has, you know, tools, you know, such a way that they can conduct a cyber assessment on how to be defensive.
Okay.
We cannot do offensive. Right? There's some limitations that we cannot go on a live production environment to conduct, you know, cyber assessments. So there are some limitations. And there is, I mean, we call it also, there's another assessment, you know, team call. We also call white team, which on a, you know, which is, which stays on a, you know, we talked about authorizing, you know, official earlier, AO. So within the AO, we conduct the assessment, you know, for certain systems. So we sometimes we use our white team. They can do similar things like, you know, validation assessment on a system and provide some vulnerability related information. So between white team, blue team, and red team, we can conduct a various spectrum of cybersecurity related assessments.
Okay. I did not know about the white team.
Thank you. Yeah. A lot of people, a lot of folks don't know, but we use white team as a, you know, as going out, filling the role, some of the, you know, ATOs for the system that they required independent assessment. And, you know, we go out and conduct the assessments on that system and identify just as a sort of like a, you know, identifying the, what is the current posture of that system. And then based on that report, we make sure that those vulnerabilities, if any, found on the system, they patch those, you know, the system owners. So we utilize, you know, white team. And a lot of times white team, we go off and there's some of the, you know, annual security reviews and other things are conducted, you know, they go off and get the system ready.
Okay.
You know, so a lot of times, you know, working together with, you know, blue team, white team, and support from red team is an amazing thing to have in our
collaboration.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very key, very important.
Can you talk about some of your other counterparts? I know that we work closely with DCI and a few other agencies.
Yeah, so Marfor Cyber, you know, also has a position called Cyber Technology Officer. You know, they that role is focused specifically on operational, you know, environment. That position looks at sort of like fills in multiple roles there as a technical director role on a cyber, defensive cyber ops, on a offensive cyber ops, the things that, you know, intelligence perspective, any vulnerabilities found, you know, that role, you know, gets informed from various perspective from Cybercom and NSA. And that role is, you know, key thing about collaborating within the Marine Corps is that whatever we learn from either operational perspective, from that role, cyber, you know, cyber technology officer from Marfor Cyber, you know, communicates to us that, hey, you know, this is what is found. These are the intel. You know, these are vulnerability found, you know, directing specifically sometimes from a acquisition perspective that here's the, some of the programs could be impacted for us. So we get, you know, deep dive into some of those things. So very, very helpful learning from the operational perspective.
Okay.
From the DCI side, we have various, you know, roles that we, you know, synchronize on a regular basis. For the headquarter, we have a service data office that resides within the DCI. We have a IC4 entity there. They're responsible for Deputy Don CIO for the Marine Corps, which is a Chief Information Security Officer, delegated that authority through our DCI within IC4. So they look outwards and, you know, work through all the our counterparts in the Navy and different, you know, joint services, informed us that what kind of new technology is coming in or new solution from the DoD perspective. So they are, they're our focal point outwarding, you know, outside of Marine Corps. And we get the information that what is coming down from outside, or new requirements or new capabilities. Within the DCI, we also have obviously a technical director role with an IC4, the authorizing official role, again there for the service perspective, and also Intel, a role that it serves on the executive level. So between Intel policy, data with operational cyber technology office.
It all comes together.
Yeah, and my role as a cyber technology office and also chief engineer role within the Marine Corps, who is actually looking across all the Marine Corps level programs with, larger scale, so we are able to collaborate all across the Marine Corps. And then we have sometimes, POs dialing in, thinking who's responsible for delivering some of the acquisition, products to us. So it is amazing to have that collaborative, arm across the Marine Corps so we can work together.
We have to work together.
Absolutely. In the cyber world, it's the must.
I can't have you on the show without talking about our favorite topic, AI. It's been a hot topic for a few years now. Can you talk about how CISCOM and larger Marine Corps is looking to use AI for cyber efforts, or is using AI?
Yeah, no, absolutely. AI is, artificial intelligence is one of my favorite topics as well. As growing up as a software engineer, if you had to write same thing, if you want to write or want to do something more than once, we used to automate that. So you don't have to redo the same thing again. And having the artificial intelligence, capability now available to us, it is super exciting for all of us out there. It is, hot topic across not just government, private industry in the world, right? There's things that we are able to not realize AI can help us now. DoD has published, guidance on responsible AI. So that's the first thing, ethical, AI is the key thing for us. So several areas, in the, information, warfare or information, cyberspace, we use is starting from like small things like, if you don't have that information on like predictive maintenance, right? For example, we have tons of data on our system, especially on the CISCOM side, right? We have sustainment data on our, ground weapon systems, right? So we use, if you use those data, work through some of the AI engines, you're able to understand some, predictive, maintenance perspective, like, what kind of things that you think breaks, and so you can prepare to, for those things. There's another aspect on using AI related, sort of like a dashboard and other things, combining different inputs from different weapon systems and a tactical, perspective as well. We're looking at every, opportunity we can get to leverage AI. However, we always keep human in the loop, right? So we don't let the AI make the decisions. On the cybersecurity, on our defensive cyber ops, or how we protect cybersecurity, there's tons of examples there, right? Where we can use artificial intelligence on analyzing networks. So, for example, back in old days, we used to hire a network engineer, and their specific job was to analyze the network to understand if there's anything going on, And a lot of times we skip, we don't realize, it's really hard to understand larger data sets. And now more and more, data being available, it's really harder for us to even detect any anomalies in our network. So there are lots of cyber, related tools out there that use artificial intelligence that they look at the, your network as a baseline, they normalize your network, performance. And if there's any unusual activities going on, it could, potentially alarm the operator and say, hey, there's something is going on. You may want to check it out. Some sort of alarm perspective that, hey, there's something is not usual going on. So you still need a human in the loop, but it actually helps us, supplements that information that we didn't have.
To find things that you can't.
You as a human being, you're limited to various, you have only few dimensions that you can look at it.
Yeah.
With AI, you can give a multi-dimensions data that it can actually dissect information that we are not able to do, you know, currently. So we use that. A lot of things we are, you know, exploring tools in. We talked about, you know, cyber assessment, you know, for our systems, right? So there are tools of, you know, available that allows us, you know, to supplement some of the penetration testing, you know, on the cyber side. So if you are able to, you know, exploit some of the vulnerabilities within the system, you know, as you are going through the system level test, cyber assessment, this AI, built-in AI tools, they can actually understand, you know, based on the conditions there, try to explore various other ways how you can explore other vulnerabilities, combination of things that we cannot think, you know. So there are other supplementary, you know, tools available using AI that helps us automate, you know, our cybersecurity-related, you know, tools. There are tools out there for incident response. You know, there's definitely threat intelligence tools that some of those commercial-based products that has a feed from various perspective on threat intelligence. So they have, if there's a threat detected by some company that goes, you know, that feeds into various data sets, so there's tools available that can inject all those information on the threat-based, you know, vulnerability information that is available that informs us as well. There's a cyber defense training and simulation perspective. You can do a lot of things with using AI. You know, you can create the scenario. You can exploit. So a lot of tools available. We can learn things, you know, from how do we exploit cybersecurity-related, you know, vulnerabilities. You know, this is just starting right now for us. Very exciting, you know, opportunity for us to explore more. And we're going to be looking at those other capabilities, how we can adopt in a various way for us to use artificial intelligence, you know, for us to get better, smarter, and secure system.
It just makes me think of maybe like 100, 200 years from now. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. Someone could have like the system like Iron Man has, where he has that guy, the guy that he talks to that does the things for him in the system. Like that would be really cool.
No, I hope it's not that far, but I'm hoping, you know, it's similar to what you just described, right? You know, you can have our commanding officer on a you know, visual display with multiple, you know, feeds coming in using generative AI, looking at different options and able to make the decision in a split seconds. I hope we can see that in hopefully next, you know, a decade. That's too far.
You know more than I know.
But so. I'm hoping it's coming soon. But hopefully no more than 10 years. I'm looking forward to seeing some of those things. I hope to see it sooner, though.
Yeah, 10 is much better than 100. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Now let's talk about you for a little bit. Can you tell us a bit about your career up until this point, how you ended up in cyber, and how long you've been with the command?
To answer your question first, you know, in cyber, did I always know, you know, I wanted to be in a cyber? No, absolutely not. Because, you know, I started my career as a, you know, chemical engineer for about a year, and then I got really interested in a pharmacy program. So I went to school where I wanted to become a pharmacist. You know, junior year, I realized that it was not for me, you know, after spending a lot of time, effort, money, you know, in-state tuition fee was cheaper, but I still had to get a lot of loans. One day I, you know, realized that when pharmacy was not a good option, I didn't want to, you know, throw away my degree that I, you know, I invested in. So I actually tried different, you know, field within the School of Pharmacy, called biochemical pharmacology, which was more research. And I got into research work, and I immediately realized I hated that so much that it was not for me. Then, you know, one summer, I tried something different, signed up for a programming class, which was, by the way, University at Buffalo, State University of New York at Buffalo. And it was really exciting. I realized that I'm really much more into the, you know, into kind of things where I see the outcome sooner than later. So, you know, I kind of saw that my passion is more into seeing the reward, seeing something that I deliver, and it works or it doesn't work, that I get to know immediately.
Research.
Yeah, exactly. Research was not a good option, right? So I immediately started double majoring in computer science in the engineering department, even though I was only a couple of classes away to get cash out my undergrad degree, BS in biochemical pharmacology. So I finished that, you know, biochemical pharmacology, but it took me a lot longer to finish, you know, computer science. But anyway, 6 years, you know, two summer schools, 248 some credits. I graduated from both degrees, and my first job was with IBM in Poughkeepsie, New York, as a security software engineer. Really exciting job. I was supporting, you know, Wall Street folks doing something totally different, you know, on an encryption algorithm. Back then, cybersecurity didn't even exist. We called it securing the system. So I got involved, you know, in a securing the system right from the beginning of my career. But I always wanted to work in the government, you know, so I had an opportunity to interview in the Warfare Center as a government, you know, civilian position. So I interviewed at Naval Surface Warfare Center at Dahlgren, you know, back in 2001. Even back in then, 2001, it was so exciting that when I interviewed in a Tomahawk, you know, department, you know, perspective as a software engineer on a Tomahawk program, I was given an on-the-spot job offer and to decide it within 2 weeks, which was really shocking for me to see in the government, you know, you can give a on-the-spot job offer, you know, 23 years ago. And it was very exciting, I was very honored to have that opportunity to work as a programmer, software engineer for Tomahawk. You know, I was able to, you know, talk to my family, my, you know, spouse, to move down south for where we've been, because we had never, you know, gone south of Atlantic City for us in from
Big
New Jersey.
Change.
It was a huge change coming down to Virginia, and I've been, you know, in this area since 2001. You know, but fast forwarding, I had an awesome opportunity within the government to do a lot of things, from Tomahawk to submarine launch ballistic missiles. I was a programmer there, SLBM division, then the CIO shop, and then I found in the Navy there was the whole division that took care of a chemical, biological, and radiological defense. You know, so I realized, hey, you know, I had an opportunity to use my chem bio background, you know, biochemical pharmacology and comp science. So I grew up in a chem bio defense in a career-wise, from software engineer to team lead to, you know, leading some of the ACAT 3-level programs there, and also being a branch head there, doing a lot of great things, working on software that was delivered by the Navy for the DoD that went after, we call the hazard prediction modeling. Basically, it was a physics-based model that tracked, you know, chemical and biological agent based on the current wind conditions, temperature, amazing work. I had an opportunity to work with the smart people there, and we led that program, and later it was transitioned to ACAT 3 program called Joint Effects Model, which worked with other programs there. But great capabilities, amazing folks with different background. You know, I had never thought of people having a background in you know, atmospheric physics. People were trying to do a PhD in atmospheric physics there. Folks with...
Very niche.
We had folks with PhD in math, PhD in physics, same person with heavy programming, you know, experience.
Yeah.
So amazing team, a lot of great opportunities there. So we led a bunch of programs there, and we delivered our first ever modeling tool within the DoD called joint, you know, JPM, that was for towards joint protection collective, you know, joint chemical biological, you know, protection, you know, systems there for shelter system. We call it system performance model, or SPM, which was really a great tool. But then, you know, I was bored. I had to do something else. So I supported NAVC, Chief Engineer's Office, and had an opportunity to support Navy's OPNAV N2N6, Task Force Cyber Awakening, first ever, you know, cyber opportunity there. So from Navy, we stood up Enduring Division through OPNAV, which is currently exists now, and feel proud to be part of the, you know, member there, part of the team there.
Plank and, holder, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely, right? It was really exciting, and had an opportunity to come over to CISCOM, support on the CAMBIO, cybersecurity program, you know, after working on all those things. So I came to CISCOM in 2017, so I've been in CISCOM since then, about 7 years. I was part of the cyber advisory team, what we call the CAT team, and then later had an opportunity to compete for the cyber technology officer position. And it's been great. In summary, I realized that I love the, you know, going after for my passion, what I like, what I enjoy the most, and it's been a really amazing journey. Sorry for the long answer.
No, you've worked on a lot of systems we're still using today, so you got to see them, you know, make it through the process, you know, go through the testing and then still use, which is not everybody gets to do that.
Yes, and absolutely. It's very exciting as well. A few years ago, I had an opportunity here to be acting chief engineer, for the CISCOM, and as well as a deputy commander for system engineering acquisition logistics. And I took a review for one of our program, long-range fire, which is using Tomahawk, and it brought back all the memories because the variant that we were using, I was a programmer for that. And so you are absolutely right. The systems that I was part of it, they still exist. And I feel fortunate to have this opportunity to be part of the team in various places.
Yeah.
And it always comes back. You know.
It always does.
And it's exciting to know that, hey, I was there.
Yeah.
You know, so absolutely. And lucky to have that opportunity.
So when you're not here keeping our cyber network secure, where can we find you?
Yeah, so I love to be outdoor. You know, when I lived in New York, we had a mountain bike clubs, you know, like folks with our, club members. We would spend, full day biking, mountain biking, and doing things that you don't get to do. So I try to continue when I can here, over the, time passes, you have different jobs. So I don't get to do a whole lot of those, but I take every opportunity to be outdoor. So I'm an outdoor person. I like to hike, if I can bike, it's even better. If I don't get to do anything, I just love the, walks outdoor with family and just enjoying, the weather, especially now the fall
is
so
nice.
It's starting now. It's just so beautiful. And I'm enjoying every day and every opportunity I get to be outdoor.
I keep saying that it's soup season.
Yes.
I finally get to start eating soup again because it's my favorite. I love this time of year. Let's move on to the lightning round. So I'm going to ask you a question and then you just say the first thing that pops in your head.
Yeah.
If you could travel anywhere, where would you go?
Yeah, so I always wanted to explore, deep space area because I'm really curious that, the universe is so huge, big, and if I can go anywhere, I want to go, exploring deep space and see things that we don't get to see, closely from, distant stars, planets, find things where we have never been, and hopefully, who knows, we can encounter other form of civilizations, who knows that we find. So absolutely, I think that's the first thing, I'll think of that will be really amazing to explore that, unknown world.
Are you a night owl or a morning person?
Oh, absolutely, night owl. I like to stay up late as much as I can. And I tell my friends, on weekends, my wife and I, we spent a lot of times staying up very late, sometimes 3 in the morning to catch up on our TV shows and movies and whatever we missed during the week, but definitely able to stay up late, not able to get up early. You know,
it's nice that your wife choice. Is the same.
Absolutely, that works really best. Absolutely. Otherwise, I don't
your
know.
Your schedules would be very different.
We would have to find something, you know, in between.
Yeah. If you could have an unlimited supply of one thing, what would it be?
Definitely like a curiosity or knowledge, right? Because what I noticed throughout my life is, as you know, through my, like we just talked about the whole story, right? I'm always curious about things that I don't know. And if I can have unlimited of those things like curiosity or knowledge, it allows me to be curious about things that I want to learn, you know, and I want to continue to learn new things and get better at something that I, you know, things that I don't know. So this allows me to improve myself, you know, discover new things, improve myself.
Constantly learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is your favorite TV show, book, movie, or podcast?
Classic book, you know, probably know, Good to Great by Phil Collins, right? The thing that it gets me is that how you want to continue to be, you know, achieve greatness, not just being good. There are so many companies, you know, that are out there, you know, they are happy to be at being good, but a lot of times they don't get to achieve the greatness. And he describes that very nicely that, you know, by studying, I think it was over 1,400 some companies, you know, studying it for over 5 years. And I think he claims that there were only 11, you know, companies that made it. You know, they talk about, you know, level 5 leadership, growing leadership within the, and you know, organization. And if you're a leader, you know, there's two critical components. One is that not just being, you know, professionally involved, included, you know, doing things that is needed for the entity that you work in, private, government, but also the personal, humility perspective. You want to be approaching, you know, your workforce, you know, personally, that, you know, you care about your team, and you realize that, you know, first important thing about anything in leadership is your people. Those are the most important. And, you know, when you care about them, you're going to be successful.
Thank you for coming on the show, sir.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for having me. And as we stated earlier in the beginning, October is a Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And, you know, all I ask everyone, the workforce, is that do your job, be careful, you know, be looking out for things that don't make sense. If you are extra careful, you can save a lot of vulnerability exploitations within the government or within the personal, you know, environment. So do your part, you know, and thank you for helping me.
Stay vigilant, listeners.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Equipping the Core. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or on social media. We'd love to hear from you.